Hello everyone, and welcome to the re-debut episode of Lavender Town. Today I wanted to talk about the making of one of my all-time favorite games ever forever, Portal. So, the basic facts before we actually jump into the episode. Portal is a puzzle platform game made in 2007 by Valve. Valve also made a ton of other games like Half-Life and Team Fortress 2, and Steam, where I bought Portal, Half-Life, and Team Fortress 2. You play as Chell, who is a test subject for Aperture Science. Now, if any of this information was new to you, or if you haven't played both of the Portal games yet, this episode contains spoilers for both of the game's characters and endings, so please wait until the next episode comes out to listen to them. Thank you. Okay, so just looking at a list on thegamer.com, I have a few really good facts that I'm very excited to share. I did a bunch of research on this, and I didn't know a lot of these things, and some of them I did know, but a lot of them I didn't know, and I'm really shocked that I didn't know some of them because Portal is like one of my favorite games forever, but I'm glad that I'm learning new information about it. So, Chell's model is a real person, so you don't really get to see Chell that much, you don't get to see much of her because you're in a testing facility without any mirrors, and unless you put like two portals next to each other in a corner, then there's really not a way to see Chell at all. But she's a real person, like at a well-funded children's museum. Her name is Alesia Gladwell, and she had a voice in Fear 2 and 3. I didn't actually get to see much of her, like I said, because Aperture Science testing facilities aren't equipped with mirrors. So this one is really cool and very important to a lot of the other facts I'm going to share, but Portal began as a 15-minute indie game made by a group of 6 or 7 college students. It was called Narbacular Drop, and I'm just going to read this off here because there's no way I can summarize this. So, Portal's successor was entitled Narbacular Drop, and it was about a princess who was kidnapped by a demon. Princess No Knees, who earned her name because she couldn't jump, used the mechanic that would go on to become portals attempt to escape her dungeon. However, for Princess No Knees, the portals were actually created by the dungeon itself. The dungeon was a sentient being named Wally. Sentient beings named Wally, man, I'm telling you. You can actually still download this game at the link in the description. So, I had to skip one because there wasn't enough info, but, the Portal team of 2007 actually only had one objective on a very, very limited time and very limited resources. Turn a 15-minute puzzle game into something profitable. Valve wanted to tie it into Half-Life somehow, hence the Black Mesa references everywhere. Black Mesa can suck my bankrupt. And it turned out really well. Since they had such a very small team, though, they were able to keep a lot of the original humor from Narbacular Drop without too many people trying to shut it down. They could also try out new mechanics without having to explain it to a bunch of people, because all the people that were there already knew what was going on. So, moving on to the January 2008 issue of Game Developer Magazine, the first thing I'm seeing is that GLaDOS was originally a placeholder. So, she was originally just a polite AI that asks you to put the portal gun on the ground. I really don't know how we got here from that, but Portal was also originally up for download only as a part of the Orange Box, which consisted of Half-Life 1 and 2, both episodes, Team Fortress 2, and of course Portal. It actually still is on Steam for $20. It's a really good deal because you're saving $15, and the entire thing would really be like $36-$35. That's a lot of money. So, Portal 2, moving on to Portal 2, it actually didn't have portals originally. It also didn't have Chell or GLaDOS. The game was initially going to be set in the mid-80s and based around a mechanic called F-Stop, which involved using a camera to grab sections of the game's scenery to solve puzzles. Cave Johnson was actually GLaDOS' replacement entirely before they scrapped all that and went back to Portal 2, the Portal 2 we know. So, as of the 10th of October in 2007, Portal has signified Portal 2 in an extremely elaborate and cool scheme. I'm also going to read this one off because there's absolutely no way I can simplify this at all. So, it was a really, really elaborate scheme. They added 26 radios to the game that, when moved around, retuned to play a piece of Morse code or a squelchy transmission sound. It was the sound files found in Portal's install folder and viewed through a slow-scan television software that contained scrambled Portal 2 imagery or even more Morse code. The Morse code led to a portal-themed bulletin board that had to be accessed via a phone line and a 56K modem. Wow. They didn't make it easy, but the payoff was the eventual announcement of the sequel. Valve went as far to change the ending of as far as to change the ending of the original game, adding a small sequence that suggested that the escaped Chell was being dragged back into the facility for further testing. That is a lot. Even just reading that for like the second or third time right now, I'm just thinking about like how big and crazy that is. Like, seriously. So, Portal 2's repulsion, propulsion, and conversion gel mechanics came from another student game from DigiPen University, where they hired the original Portal team from, called The Power of Paint. They hired the team that made this before Left 4 Dead was released, and they used the paint mechanics from that game in Portal 2. And finally, my last fact. I'll end this off by reminding you that Steam has a ton of official spin-offs and 3 fully endorsed Portal mods made for you, the public, to purchase and enjoy. These games also go on sale very, very often, so remember to check Steam around the holidays to get the best prices on the amazing games. Okay, that's all for the fun facts. Now I wanted to talk about the actual game itself, the story and the mechanics and some of the Easter eggs, too. Okay, so I have found an Xbox Achievements article written by Lee Bradley in 2012, and it's called 20 Things You Should Know About Portal 2. So, Valve writers Chet Falizek and Eric Woolpaw gave a talk called How to Make a Sequel to a Game That Doesn't Need One. It was all about the development of Portal 2 and the ideas the studio abandoned along the way. It was also the most entertaining and informative talk of the show. Okay, so there are also a lot of spoilers for Portal 2, so if you haven't played Portal 2 yet, you should probably go play Portal 2. I hear it's pretty good. And I hear being, I've played it, I'm playing it right now, actually. So, first of all, Chell wasn't going to be in it. She was not going to be in Portal 2 at all. They cut Chell, so she got out at the end of the first game. Good luck to her, who needs her? Said Falizek. Right, who needs her? Echoed Woolpaw. But turns out everyone did. Chell eventually made the cut and would return as Portal 2's playable character. So GLaDOS also wasn't going to be there. So she kind of died at the end of Portal, and she had a nice little story arc, and now it's time for a new villain. She was penciled in to make a small cameo appearance as a tiny robot spouting legalese before each challenge. But then they, like, you know, put her back in. And Portals also weren't going to be there at all. In the game Portal 2, titled with one of the main mechanics of the game Portal, Portal 2 was not going to have Portals at all. They cut them. They cut Portals. So Falizek said that they cut Portals. Sure, the name is in the title, but we figured we'd worry about that later. Who needs them? We had a sexy new mechanic, and we were super confident in that. Confidence is cool. Okay, so Cave Johnson was the main antagonist for Portal 2, which is crazy thinking about it, because he's the one spouting legalese and crazy things about lemons. So he was gonna be the main antagonist. He was going to be the game's main baddie, but then life gave him lemons. Yeah. Originally he was going to be the southern billionaire, but he eventually transmogrified into the Midwestern millionaire that appears in Portal 2. So, Portal 2 was actually going to be a prequel. It was going to be set in the 1980s, as I said before. And it was going to be, like, 20 years before the events of Portal 1. It was going to be about this robot uprising, when you could see a whole new part of Aperture Science before it was destroyed. So you originally played a character called Mel, who had blonde hair and a different colored jumpsuit, and was pretty obviously not Chell. The first Portal was about the story and the relationship you had with GLaDOS. So when she wakes up and doesn't realize that you're the person that did those things to her in a portal, it's actually a huge blow to the player. Every playtester was like, oh. So, you know, Chell went back in. There was a paranoid sphere. Oh, God, so it wasn't like Wheatley. So Wheatley, the intelligence-dampening sphere that guides you through the start of the game, has his origins in another character. Yeah, guides you through the start of the game. Right. He only guides you through the start of the game. Totally. It was this paranoid sphere that had carved out a section of Old Aperture as his own little kingdom. Fiefdom. He had to set up all these defenses to protect it. Unfortunately, all the defenses were pointed in one direction, so you could fall in about 2 feet behind him and pluck him off his pedestal. That's... No! No, that's terrible. No. So when Valve developed the original prototype sphere, you could bash him against walls and throw him downstairs. That's terrible. No. And they wanted you to be able to do the same for Wheatley. Unfortunately, however, it caused them about a year of pain and suffering. Being able to drop Wheatley meant that they had to gate the player, making sure you carried him into doors so he could open the next area. Kind of like Guilty Spark in Halo. So they shortened the section down and made sure Wheatley was stuck in your hands. Terrible. Oh no, Wheatley originally had a different voice? I can't imagine one with... So, people liked his voice enough that when our first Stephen Merchant session was delayed a month right before E3 where we debuted Portal 2, we were like, oh, what the hell, we're just gonna play the Richard audio. Wow, that's wonderful. So the writers are also seriously considered Richard, Richard Iowady, the star of the IT Crowd and the director of Submarine to play the role of Wheatley. Oh, I cannot. Wow. Now I can't imagine Wheatley without his voice. That'd be, oh god, that'd be so much funnier. Oh man, that'd be great. So, Stephen Merchant actually recorded over 16 hours of Wheatley lines. Wow. So, Woolpaw just said that we have about 16 and a half hours of Stephen Merchant just doing stuff. In that time, we just sort of let him mess around with the lines, and he did a lot of improv, some of which we used and some of which we edited together after the fact. He really threw himself into it. It was terrifying because we didn't have him audition. We were just giving him some money to do it. And if he had sucked or not cared because, you know, he was going to build a new deck on his house, we were super screwed. He really knocked it out of the park. Yeah, I did. So, Wheatley was gonna die early on. Forever. So, in the version of Portal 2 that shipped, Wheatley was a central figure right up to the game's final moments. Yeah. But in previous versions of the game, he didn't survive quite so long. If he didn't survive quite so long, that would be sad. I'd be sad, honestly. I like doing Wheatley testing. No, I don't. So, originally, GLaDOS crushed Wheatley right after she woke up, and that was it. You didn't see him anymore. He was just dead and gone. We just kind of let the finality... We thought that kind of finality let everyone understand just how evil GLaDOS was. However, people liked Wheatley and Valve didn't want to waste the time you had spent building a relationship with the character. So, they made the death fake and developed Wheatley into the main antagonist. What do you do when you don't want a character to die? Make him the main antagonist, and then drop Cave Johnson. Yeah. So, in the early version of the game, you would encounter the Morgan Freeman sphere. This is a sphere that had been trapped in a small room for a few centuries, and as a result was just incredibly, incredibly wise, but only about the 20 by 20 space in which he was trapped. So as soon as you dragged him 22 feet out of the room, his mind was blown and he was pretty much useless. Although as the game progressed, he eventually started delivering some homespun wisdom, all of which related back to this 20 by 20 space that he'd been living in. That would be amazing. So far from the co-op mode that ended up in Portal 2, Valve originally explored the idea of competitive multiplayer. I love competitive multiplayer. So you get to like... That'd be so amazing. I would love that. Like, you get to shoot portals at each other and, like, make each other fall off with, like, propulsion gel. That'd be awesome, dude. Oh my gosh, I love that. But they said that it was super chaotic, difficult to tell what was going on, and no fun. Man. Okay, so the original ending actually had Chell speak her first word. No, not allowed. Oh gosh. Y'all, there's a thunderstorm going on, and it is shaking my whole house. So during the development, the first ending the Valve settled upon culminated in a stalemate between Wheatley and GLaDOS, something that could only be settled by Chell speaking her first word. We just had to click a button to say yes. And they said, oh my god, Chell's finally gonna speak. And then Valve put it in. And then the writers decided it sucked a lot. It really sucked. So, at one point in production, explained Wolpaw, we had this idea that scattered through the game, there would be these fake endings, where Chell would die and we'd play a song, and if you wanted to, you could just quit there. Well, what song? No, I want to hear the songs. I want to hear all the GLaDOS songs. I love the GLaDOS songs. She's wonderful. Ella McLean is wonderful. So, there's this part where there's a crack in the ceiling and you can see the moon. You can put a portal on the moon. What? You can put a portal on the moon! And if you put one on the wall, it would suck you out onto the moon and you would asphyxiate while listening to a sad song about the moon. We eventually cut the alternate endings partly because of the amount of work it was going to be for how little payoff, and partly because we overestimated how many great fake endings we would be able to come up with. GLaDOS was a potato. So why was GLaDOS a potato? So Jay and I would take these long walks trying to figure out what we were going to do with the story, explained Wolpaw. We knew GLaDOS was going to get deposed and she was going to have to come with you, and we were trying to figure out what was the most humiliating thing to happen to her. We figured out that turning her into a potato battery was pretty bad. It just seemed super sad that she would be in this shriveled, crappy little potato. The bird was gonna... No! The bird was gonna eat GLaDOS. Oh, no! Oh, no! Oh, that's terrible. So, expanding on the subject of the potato, Wolpaw also said that we knew we would have to explain later on why GLaDOS wouldn't just tell you how to solve the puzzles the wheelie sets up for you. So our thought was that the bird was going to come in every couple of chambers and attack the potato and eat part of it, and GLaDOS was going to get stupider and stupider as he went along. The idea, like so many of the others, was eventually just dropped. There were a couple of problems, explained Wolpaw. The first was that the idea of a stupid GLaDOS was funnier when we said it than when we actually tried to write it. The other is that it's a big deal to get a bird fly in and attack your view model. It's a lot of work. Wow. So that was actually, that's really cool. I didn't know most of those facts, and honestly, this is the first time I'm reading them. But that's really cool. So a stupid little shriveled potato GLaDOS getting eaten by a bird. That's terrible. Oh, that's terrible. A stupid GLaDOS. I can't imagine a stupid GLaDOS, honestly. Moving on. So this next bit might get a little bit creepy. I found an article on Grunge explaining creepy things we found in Portal by Shannon Camp, made in 2019. Wonderful. Okay. So, first of all, GLaDOS flooded aperture with neurotoxin and bring your daughter to work day. So the idea that bring your daughter to work day could be sinister in any way seems almost laughable. It could. I hate bring your daughter to work day. I hate it so much. I've been a part of so much of it. It sucks. But when you work at Aperture Science, it's easy to see how this was a bad idea. As players make their way through the abandoned halls of Aperture, the overturned chairs and empty conference rooms set an eerie tone. Projectors still display meetings that were abandoned halfway through, and it's easy to imagine the panicked retreat the day GLaDOS used deadly neurotoxin to flood the enrichment center. I actually joke around about deadly neurotoxin a lot, which I find is pretty funny. So not only did GLaDOS decide to execute employees, but she released the neurotoxin on Bring Your Daughter to Work Day. That is so terrible. So this dark day in Aperture's history can be seen by walking through the science fair held on the day in question. While Chell observes the unsettling scene, Wheatley informs her that this well-intentioned office morale booster did not end well. And while there's humor in his delivery of the line, the actual story is far darker than most players realize. So, it gets even creepier when you realize that one of the daughter's science displays is signed by Chell. Did Chell somehow witness and survive GLaDOS's massacre, only to be imprisoned by the AI for her entire life? Oh, okay. So, you aren't alone in Aperture as you thought. So, the eerie quiet that permeates Aperture Science Laboratories is unsettling, but the idea that you may not be alone as you originally thought may be even more so. Early on, players can find hidden dens throughout the facility. Old cans of beans, water bottles, and writing on the walls all show evidence of a makeshift home. As seen in the webcomic Portal 2 Lab Rat, Doug Ratman is the former Aperture employee responsible for these aptly named Ratman Dens. While his story can be pieced together in the game, the biggest chunks of lore come from the comic. Ratman was one of the only employees to survive when GLaDOS flooded Aperture with neurotoxin. Ratman followed Chell around the facility during the events of Portal 1, attempting to help her defeat GLaDOS. But when Chell is dragged back to the facility at the end of the first game, Ratman forgoes his own escape to hook Chell up to the cryo chamber in order to keep her safe. The ultimate fate of Ratman is one of the mysteries that still haunts Portal fans to this day. Okay. Half-Life's Borealis may be hiding in Portal's Aperture. I don't think I ever played Half-Life. I bought it, but I never played it. The abandoned retro sections of Aperture are quirky and terrifying all the same. But when players explore locations that are out of the way of your typical gameplay, things get downright creepy. In some of the more isolated parts of Aperture, you can find several vitrified chambers. Inside one of these chambers is a huge room with a dry dock for a ship inside. The name on one of the life preservers informs you that the dry dock was created for a ship called the Borealis, which might sound familiar to fans of the Half-Life franchise. Oh, okay. In Half-Life 2, Episode 2, it's revealed that Aperture Science had built the Borealis as a research vessel for some promising research, but in their haste to beat Black Mesa for funding, an accident occurred that caused the vessel and its dry dock to disappear into thin air, taking all of its crew with it. While the contents of the ship and nature of the experiments are never explicitly stated, it is implied in an audio log from Cave Johnson that large-scale teleportation has something to do with it. GLaDOS has a creepy character design. What? 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 No. 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 No way. Though she's often thought of as an antagonist to our main character, Chell, it's no secret that GLaDOS has won over the hearts of Portal fans everywhere. From her snarky comments to her love for Cave Johnson's lemon tree. GLaDOS is arguably the most loved character of the franchise. While very little is known of the AI with an anger problem, in the first game, more of GLaDOS' backstory is revealed through the story of the second. GLaDOS is actually the consciousness of Carolyn. Aww, Carolyn. Aperture founder Cave Johnson's assistant. And as we learn about how Carolyn was forcefully placed into GLaDOS against her wishes, something else begins to come to light. GLaDOS' physical form is reminiscent of a woman hanging upside down, bound and gagged. Wait, what? Hold on a minute. Wait, stop. Hold on a minute. Shut up. No, stop. Oh my god, okay. Portal's art director Jeremy Bennett also confirmed that the character design for GLaDOS was supposed to mix Carolyn's femininity and the AI's raw power. With this in mind, it's difficult to look at her without feeling a bit more sympathy than you did while dodging her attacks. Maybe Black Mesa? One of the fan-favorite characters from the Portal franchise comes in the form of an inanimate object that doesn't interact with the character in any new meaningful way. In fact, the character in question is a literal box with a pink heart. Much like Wilson from Tom Hanks' movie Castaway, players found themselves attached to an inanimate object when the companion cube was introduced. Yeah, I love the companion cube. I cried whenever I had to incinerate him. Maybe it was because up until this point, players had been completely isolated, except for a snarky AI who obviously wanted them dead. No, she doesn't want you dead, she just wants you gone. She wants you gone now. She used to want you dead, but now she only wants you gone. As players interact with the companion cube in both the first and second Portal games, GLaDOS makes references to former test subjects thinking they can hear the cube talking to them. She also mentions that the cubes are sentient. I don't remember that. This theme is only furthered when GLaDOS forces you to incinerate your cube in the first game. When players obey her orders, they're awarded the fratricide achievement. Since fratricide means the killing of a sibling, it's suggested that the companion cube wasn't as inanimate as GLaDOS first led us to believe. Oh, the radio signal. Yeah, the creepy radio signal in Portal 2. The many hidden dens of former Trapper employee Doug Ratman can be found littered throughout the now-abandoned facility. And while most of them contain chilling art and messages left by Ratman, one in particular contains something eerie. If you pick up a radio in Test Chamber 6 of Chapter 2, I'll have to go back to that. Way back to that. You'll hear a jumble of mixed radio signals. At first, these signals sound like audio filler. It seemed far-fetched that the jumble of sounds was anything important. Oh! But knowing how deep the lore of Portal and Aperture go, fans decided to try to decode what they felt might be a secret message. When they did, fans found out that the radio signals on this handheld radio actually contained an image of a companion cube on the moon. This can either be seen as the foreshadowing for the end of the game when Wheatley gets launched into space, bring him home, by the way, or a dark message about Doug Ratman's final fate. Man, everyone get launched to the moon, bro. A sentient turret tells you the future. Oh, Oracle Turret, yeah. So most of the adversaries within the walls of Aperture Science aren't actively trying to kill you. For most of the game, players will find themselves bested by a misplaced portal or a miscalculation in physics. But while these are the most common culprits for your character's demise, one of the few actively hostile characters in this game might actually hold a dark secret if you get the chance to listen. So, while going through the laser turret redemption line in the Aperture facility, players can find a turret who, while activated, isn't targeting them. The turret even tells the player that they're different in an attempt to get you to save them. If you do save the turret from the incinerator, you'll be rewarded with a retelling of the story of Prometheus. The turret tells players that Prometheus was punished by the gods for giving the gift of knowledge to men, and was subsequently pecked by birds. Oh! This bears an unsettling parallel to GLaDOS' fate when Wheatley takes her power and she's forced to reside in a potato, constantly being attacked by birds. Oh, birds. Creepy dialogue shows Carolyn being forced to become GLaDOS in Portal 2. Oh! Okay. When you reach the sealed-off portions of the Aperture Science Laboratories, you're treated to some entertaining insights into the early days of the company. We even hear snippets of dialogue from GLaDOS before she became an antagonistic AI. The chipper and dedicated assistant Carolyn shows a totally different side of GLaDOS, but this glimpse into her past is now sunshine. Genetic life form and disk operating system. That's why it says genetic life form. Okay. In the unused dialogue found in the files of Portal 2, players discovered some chilling audio clips. Snippets of Carolyn's voice actress, Ellen McLean. Oh, Ellen. Can be heard explicitly stating, "Mr. Johnson, I do not want this." The dialogue was part of a scene in which Carolyn is forced to have her consciousness transferred into the machine that would become GLaDOS. This is already hinted at in Johnson's audio recording that tells his workers to have Carolyn run the place even if she refuses. She's modest like that. It's also been rumored that the reason why we only have audio files of Carolyn's side of the conversation is because Valve realized the scene could be perceived as assault, which did not match the tone of the game. Shit, okay. Oh, no. I don't want to... No. Cave Johnson... Oh, Cave Johnson. Convinced the homeless to risk their lives for $60. That's right. Welcome to Aperture, where the science is theoretical, but your $60 is fact. It's facts, bro. It's no secret that the way Cave Johnson ran his testing facility was a bit less than ethical. And while his capitalist attitude may have been the very thing that helps him to succeed in the business world, it was also what led to a lot of the poor decisions made throughout his career. The slow descent from Johnson's high hopes for his company into the disheartened man he becomes toward the end of his life is tragic. In the early days of Aperture, Cave Johnson recruited what he felt were the best of humanity to come and test his ideas. He only wanted smart and well-respected citizens to lend credibility to what he was doing, but as his tests became more dangerous, the quality of his test subjects began to dip down below his standards. Eventually, Johnson stooped to recruiting homeless people for the promise of $60. And while this is dark enough, his complete lack of respect or regard for the lives of those test subjects may be the scariest thing found in the game. No, I think the comment about GLaDOS' character design is way creepier. Oh, the creepy side effects of science. Accidents hurt. You will be hurt. Co-workers, don't endanger others. The company, replacements are costly. Investigations impede progress. Oh! Oh, okay, well, that's something. Portal shows unbridled capitalism at the expense of national safety. Oh, God. Okay. Well. I think that's where I'm going to end the episode. Thank you for listening to the re-debut episode, and I'd like to state one more time that Portal games are almost always on sale over the holidays. These games are wonderful, and this is not an advertisement. I just really think that everyone should go and buy and play these games because they're really great games, and I think that they're just really fun, and sometimes you think with portals in real life, and that's really a good thing, thinking with portals. So just remember to stay safe, have fun, and don't get killed by a turret. And also, burn people's houses down with lemons.